Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to our second Big Wednesday Hour here at Catholic Answers Live. We continue with our pro-life open forum. And if you have questions about life in its various stages and how we are to treat that life, especially how the Catholic Church understands it and in its ethical teachings, its moral teachings, 888-318-7884 is the number. If you are not a pro-life person and you feel in any way excluded or that your view needs to be heard, please call. As long as we can have a polite conversation, we love to have a conversation with you. 888-318-7884 is the number. Certainly, we live in a time of great controversy surrounding how humans are to be treated from conception to natural death, and at almost every moment in between. Our guest this hour is just a perfect person to help us sort that out. Stephanie Gray is our guest. Stephanie is the co-founder of the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, where she spent 12 years as executive director. She's the author of Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth, as well as a Physician's Guide to Discussing Abortion. If you want to find her stuff online, loveunleasheslife.com, right? I always am never sure. .com, not .org.
.com,
okay.
Correct. Loveunleasheslife.com.
Very good. Stephanie Gray, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me back.
I said that to the listener because I want people to know you're not at all averse to speaking with those who have other views, who come at this and from different directions. You're happy to talk with them.
That's correct. In fact, I just recently debated the former president of the ACLU, Nadine Strossen, at the University of Virginia Law School. And just prior to that, I debated a law professor in Boulder, Colorado. And coming up in 2 weeks, I'm debating the first medical director of the International Planned Parenthood Federation at Berkeley. So I welcome, you know, hearing the viewpoint of people that is different from my own in order to have a very healthy discussion.
All right. We'll look forward to that then. 888-318-7884, the number 888-318-7884. I was thinking that today, one of the very significant things about today is that it's the 50th anniversary of the killing of Dr. Martin Luther King. And he's always invoked on both sides of this debate. People should know that the debate was not in a form that it is now, because it was 5 years. He died 5 years before the Supreme Court decision came down on Roe versus Wade. But he certainly never expressed any support for abortion in his life. And I just wanted to say this because it will be much discussed. He did receive an award from the Margaret Sanger Award from Planned Parenthood. But people should also know that Planned Parenthood at that time was anti-abortion. They were not favoring abortion. As a matter of fact, they said in their literature that abortion was killing. And they always made a very strong point of saying contraception is not abortion and that kind of thing. So, I do think that Martin Luther King is a person to invoke on this anniversary. However, because this is the civil rights issue of our day, isn't it? This is the main civil rights issue of our day. Who's a human being and who's not?
Absolutely. Throughout the history of my 15-plus years of full-time pro-life work, I have routinely quoted Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I have analogized how he responded to the injustice of racism, to how we ought to respond to the injustice of abortion. His letter from Birmingham jail is probably one of my most my favorite pieces of writing that he composed, which so powerfully talks about the need to confront a guilty culture when an injustice is happening, no matter what the response is to us, that we have to move forward with boldness, that we have to capture the sacrificial spirit of the early church. And he writes about the early church and how they brought an end to infanticide and gladiatorial contests because they engaged the culture, they confronted the culture. And he said, this is why I'm confronting the culture on racism. And he was criticized by church leaders of the day. That's why he wrote his letter from Birmingham jail. It was in response to critical clergymen who were like, hey, you know, we agree with your end result, but we don't like your controversial tactics, your approach to achieving your end result. And Dr. King explained why he needed to be controversial, why he needed to engage, he needed to confront. And the same is very much true for the pro-life movement. We have to be peaceful, as Dr. King was, but we have to be bold. We have to be courageous. And we have to remember, as Dr. King said in his letter from Birmingham jail, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And he recognized that to consider the black person inferior to the white was not only an attack on black people, but it would be an attack on others. And we're now seeing, correspondingly, an attack on the preborn child is not just an attack on them. It's leading to attacks on other more vulnerable persons, such as the disabled, the elderly, who are now under attack with assisted suicide and euthanasia. So Dr. King's words, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, are as true today as they were when he composed that letter.
Amen, sister. Yeah. And one of the great things about Letter from a Birmingham Jail is that it's, I think in most schools at some point in history class, students have to read it. And it's just one of those things where you almost wish it was considered one of the founding documents, you know, like the Constitution or whatnot. It's that good. And
it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want to point out, too, that in 1943 and in 1958, and probably more successfully in 1958, the U.S. Catholic bishops made very grave statements against racism, against racial discrimination in the United States. Mm. And one of the things that you kind of notice between those statements is that things were going very well in 1943 for the improvement of the lives of black people in America. In 1958, they were not. Things had gone back the other way. Mm. I say that only to give pro-life people hope. This is not a thing that is a straight line. It goes up and down. There's reactions, and a good part of the reason that Martin Luther King had to do what he did and those around him had to do is because in the 1950s, there was such a backlash against black liberation. In the 1960s, they had to fight so hard to reverse that. Well, we maybe feel that backlash ourselves sometimes. I don't want to suggest that I or anybody like me is facing the dogs and the water cannons or anything like that. But I just want to take hope from what a person like Martin Luther King accomplished.
Well, that, and also I think what's important to remember is we're not facing the dogs and the water cannons, the fire hoses, you know, the billy clubs and so forth, but the babies are. And I think an important point for us to remember when it comes to analogizing the pro-life movement to the civil rights movement is the victims in the civil rights movement were able to protest. They were able to march in the streets. They were able to hold signs that said, I am a man. We are not the victims like they were. Aborted children are, or preborn children are, who are being deprived of personhood status and are at risk of abortion. But unlike the civil rights activists, the preborn child cannot march in the street. The child cannot hold a sign that says, I am a human, the way the black man held a sign that said, I am a man. So the preborn child is under attack very much the way civil rights activists were, with the water cannons, with the, you know, the angry police officers chasing after them with baseball bats. Yeah. So we very much are standing in their place representing them.
Thank you for making that point, because it's such a dignified thing that the sanitation workers in Memphis did, holding up those signs that said, I am a man. And it is, and we don't respect the lives of others if we don't respect the dignity of others. And those men were insisting that their dignity be respected. And that's exactly what we have to do in the place of the unborn. 888-318-7884 is our number. It's a pro-life open forum this hour. If you have any questions about life at its various stages and the ethical treatment of that life, Stephanie Gray, activist and author, is here to answer those questions. 888-318-7884. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with your calls after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Talking about abortion can be scary, but so is anything with which you're unfamiliar. People need to learn how to talk about abortion in ways that inspire confidence in the truth of the pro-life position. We must talk about abortion because we are afraid. Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn that teaches you to face those fears, to engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others. Field-tested on college campuses, Persuasive Pro-Life will help you to change people's hearts and minds and begin to build up a pro-life culture in today's world, one person one conversation at a time. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, today by calling 1-888-291-8000, going to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area. Also available as an ebook.
Go forth and preach the good news. It's not just a suggestion. If you want to take more seriously the command of Jesus to share the gospel with those around you, consider joining St. Paul Street Evangelization. It's a grassroots organization that brings the Catholic faith to the streets in a non-confrontational way. Visit our website, www.streetevangelization.com, to learn more. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. It's time to do our part.
Did you know that Catholic Answers Live is on TV? What began as a monthly series on EWTN in April of 2017 is now going to be coming to you on a weekly basis. You can catch Catholic Answers Live TV Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN, with an encore at 2:30 a.m. on Sundays. We'll also be available soon on Apple TV, Roku, and the Augustine Institute's multimedia platform, Form. Make a point of making Catholic Answers Live TV part of your weekly view, and we'll see you on the airwaves.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's a pro-life open forum this hour. 888-318-7884 is the number. Stephanie Gray is our guest. And I didn't really give you a chance to respond when we went to the break. I was just talking about it really is striking what that's just that simple sign, I am a man, said when the Memphis sanitation workers held it, because it's just so obviously a true thing that it forced forced people to recognize the indignity of how those men were being treated because they behaved so with such dignity and pointed to their own dignity. I didn't let you follow up on that at all.
Well, yeah, you know, what strikes me is whenever we talk about the dignity of the person is that so often as our culture moves towards embracing assisted suicide and euthanasia, we're seeing people talk about, oh, at the end of my life, I will lose my dignity. Or if I'm not allowed to die the way I want, it will be an undignified death. And what always strikes me is that we inherently have dignity. And dignity cannot be taken from us. So if when someone is sick or dying, you know, they're soiling themselves and they need to be changed, or they're drooling and they need their mouths wiped, that's not a sign that they have lost their dignity. In fact, it is us changing them or wiping their mouths that conveys we recognize their dignity. And so we take away the things which are not respecting or showing the dignity that they actually have. You know, I often think of if you have a priceless painting and it's been hidden away and it's covered in dust, the dust on the painting does not mean the painting has lost its dignity.
Yes.
It just means we're not treating the painting with its, maybe dignity is the wrong word, but with its value and the significance that the painting has. So we don't get rid of the painting, we get rid of the dust. So if someone is feeling like they're not being treated with dignity, the best thing we can do is not say you've lost your dignity, but to say, let me treat you with the dignity you have and is inherent to your being. That's important.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that addendum. 888-318-7884, our number. Let's go to Jane in Naples, Florida, listening to EWTN on Sirius Satellite Radio. Jane, your question for Stephanie Gray.
My question might be a little off, but I was wondering if I could get some references for how Planned Parenthood is involved with the Girl Scouts. My granddaughter is in the Girl Scouts, and I refused to buy the cookies this year. And my daughter-in-law gave me a website, Snoops.com, and she said it will explain everything, and Planned Parenthood is not involved with the Girl Scouts of America.
Well, a couple things come to mind. Whenever we have questions, you know, is this organization or that organization funding or in some way supporting what otherwise would be a good cause? I say go to the organization directly. Give them a phone call. Don't tell them your position. Just say, I'm curious as to what the Girl Scouts of America support or who they're supported by and whether there's any endorsement of this other organization. And so first check with them to see what they say. And sometimes because people can be so comfortable with who they support, they might very freely speak of their support. Then the other source that I would recommend besides the original source itself is to go to Live Action, an organization run by Lila Rhodes. They've done a lot of exposés on Planned Parenthood, and they would be able to provide information to you about what organizations are supported by Planned Parenthood or support Planned Parenthood.
Oh, good. They're good ideas. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Jane.
You're welcome.
I've heard a lot of talk both ways on that, too, so I appreciate that direction. I wonder how let me put it this way, because you're an ethicist. How intertwined does an organization have to be with something like Planned Parenthood to make it completely objectionable to us? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I know. That's always the question, not specifically in this case, but in any case, if someone is receiving support. So the first thing I would say, well, is the Girl Scouts of America doing anything to directly involve themselves with support of Planned Parenthood? Are they endorsing abortion? Are they endorsing contraception by volunteer time, by encouragement of people to get involved in that organization, by financial support? If you have any of those things, then I think you should be very concerned.
I gotcha. Okay. Again, 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. Stephanie Gray is our guest, and we go now to Jeff in Portland, Oregon, listening on Modern Day Radio. Jeff, you are on with Stephanie Gray. Your question, please.
Well, the argument you hear all the time is it's not a viable living tissue, right? That if it's taken away from the womb, it will die. Did they not just at that moment confess, realize, and tell you that it's actually living?
You're very sharp. That's a great point. If I was debating someone who raised that, I would respond that same way. If we're talking about any type of intervention and bringing about death, that's a confession, as you've rightly pointed out, that prior to death there was life. And I think another point we can make, and that certainly is a powerful one, but another point we can make is to ask, what do you mean by viability? If we're talking about the child's ability to survive aside from the mother, then yes, very early in pregnancy, and for a good part of pregnancy, the preborn child cannot survive without the mother. But what about a born child? Can a born child survive without the involvement of someone else? You know, if a newborn baby is taken to a room and placed in the room by herself, and no one enters the room for 7 days, when someone then comes in a week later, they're going to find a corpse, not a living child, because even newborn children cannot survive without the assistance of someone in some capacity. They're more independent than a fetus, but they're still dependent in a way that I am not dependent. I am more independent than the born child. So we all have varying degrees of an ability to survive on our own. The question we have to ask someone is, what are human rights grounded in? Are human rights grounded in how viable we are, or are they grounded in what we are as human beings? And that's really the key, because if they were viability rights, they'd be called that. But by virtue of being called human rights, then all that matters is that you're human, not how independent you are, not your ability to survive on your own. Great point.
Jeff, how's that for you?
And it's excellent. The other thing is it does come right to the issue of when does life begin? Because as soon as you admitted it was something that could die, you just admitted that life had begun. So
yes,
you got my double point there.
Absolutely, and you know, Jeff, when people, you know, the question of when life begins, I always like to point out that if we talk about where we would ban abortion, whether it's 3 months or 6 months or 9 months at birth, even that is a concession. We acknowledge life begins at fertilization, because to talk about 3 months is to admit that something significant happened 3 months ago.
Yeah.
That we started counting the passage of time, or something significant happened 6 months ago or 9 months ago that we started watching the passing of time on a clock. And so what happened 6 months ago? What happened 3 months ago? That was the moment of fertilization. That's when life begins. And that's what embryology textbooks tell us time and again, that human development begins at fertilization.
Jeff, thanks so much. I appreciate the call. 888-318-7884, our number. Stephanie from Facebook, John on Facebook, typed in the following question. To what degree has the American Catholic Church's involvement in the anti-life pedophilia scandals damaged and undermined its witness for life? Or, has that situation presented any unexpected opportunities?
I mean, I have not thought much about paralleling how some in the church have responded to sex scandals and the injustice and scandal of abortion. What I would say is that cover-up is a problem. Yeah. And there were people in the church who covered up wrongdoing rather than bringing what's in darkness into the light so it could be dealt with, so that justice could be done, so that victims could be helped, and so forth. And so the tendency to cover up stuff when we're guilty or someone we know is guilty and we're afraid of what uncovering it could do to us is a tendency that sometimes happens within the battle of abortion today. There's a tendency to cover up our involvement, our complicity, the injustice of abortion, the brutality of it. We want to kind of sweep it under the rug. And that's a tendency that between those two injustices, I would say we have to resist. No more cover up. We need to bring what's in darkness into the light. We need to be a voice for the victims, and we need to bring justice so that those who have victimized have consequences for their preying on the vulnerable, whether they have preyed on born children or whether they have preyed on preborn children.
And there is also the other thing, however, I'll throw this out at you and see what you think. I mean, sometimes this idea, because it's so simple scientifically, I mean, really for well over 100 years, embryologists have known when a mammal's life begins and how the mammal's life begins within the mother. There's just no – and human beings are mammals, and so we're not different. Our lives begin at that moment of – that scientists call fertilization, that we call conception. But if you say that, it's very easy to just avoid that conversation and say, oh, why don't you just look at yourselves and your pedophilia problem? And, you know, then it allows a kind of escape from having to face the reality of what's going on in abortion.
And that's a good point, that when we acknowledge other injustices have gone on or still are going on, we need to be mindful that some people might bring these other issues up to get us away from the topic at hand. So that, for example, if abortion is being discussed, they'll bring up other scandals or other issues so that they don't have to defend the indefensible. And so I think there is that importance that we have wisdom to know, is someone legitimately bringing this other concern up, or are they trying to bring it up to distract us from talking about abortion because they don't want to defend the killing of children, but by holding a pro-choice position, that's essentially what they're doing. So I think we certainly need to be aware of why is someone bringing this up and what are their ultimate motives.
Again, 888-318-7884, our number. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this hour is Stephanie Gray. Stephanie is the co-founder of the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. Oh, you know, I'm saying that, but how are things going in Canada? It doesn't seem like it's going very well up there on pro-life issues. Am I mistaken from my limited understanding?
Well, there certainly are many challenges going on in Canada right now. We have a very pro-abortion prime minister who has now created with his government this test that any organization in Canada that would get some government funding in order to hire students and essentially create jobs over the summer for young people now have to sign a document indicating that they are in favor of abortion and so on and so forth. And so there have been various churches and ministries that are like crying out saying, this is ridiculous, that if we want to hire someone to help us feed the homeless, we shouldn't have to make a test that we hold a position on abortion that aligns with the government when we don't hold that position. But we also shouldn't be denied government funding that any other organization would get just because we hold, you know, the view that we do on abortion. So, yeah, there's a lot going on in Canada that involves censorship, injustice. I mean, there's the primary injustice of killing preborn children, of killing the sick and elderly, which is now happening with euthanasia here.
Yeah.
But then there are so many other elements that are being thrown in with how pro-life speech and pro-lifers are being treated.
I think California might be a Canadian province. I'm not sure, but it's all the same stuff is going on here.
I know.
You've probably heard about the California law that says if you run a pro-life facility, you have to give out information on where someone can get an abortion, which is so clearly
challenged in the Supreme Court, right?
I don't believe it's been decided yet, however, though. It's
right. I think we're waiting on the decision. Yes.
But
yes.
One would hope it'd just be a 9-0 decision that would say stop that. Because, we have a First Amendment here. You can't tell people they have to say, now point to the abortion clinic. No, I don't have to. Well, I would hope. But maybe abortion has a very poisoning effect.
Well, and this is how desperate the abortion rights movement is getting, whether in your country or mine or other parts of the world, is they talk about choice. But they really want to force abortion and support of abortion and promotion of abortion on people and take our choice away from us to say, no, I don't support it. I don't agree with that.
Yep. Stephanie Gray is our guest. Lots of calls. I've been hogging Stephanie. I'll let you talk to her when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers is doing it again. We're holding our fifth annual Apologetics Conference this September in beautiful San Diego, California, and we'd like to see you there.
We've had a wonderful time going home all enthused.
Every time we come here, it's just an incredible experience.
Normally, you'd have to root through a dozen different books to get half the stuff I've learned here.
These guys are so amazing. I always get so much, learn so much. I've already signed up for next year.
Join us this September 27th to the 30th for a lively and inspiring conference with an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to jumpstart your faith. All of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and special keynote speaker, Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke.
I enjoy the atmosphere and the friendliness of the people. I'm having a great time.
I love it. I love it. I'm so glad I came here.
I've just learned so much. You know, I've been a Catholic all my life. It's just been so wonderful.
I love it. I want to come back every year.
God helps those who help themselves. Preach the gospel always. When necessary, use words. We all hear sayings like these, and we assume they come from the Bible, the saints, or famous Christian writers. Nobody can seem to place their origin, but by sheer repetition, they've acquired a halo of truth. In my new book, What the Saints Never Said, I look at over 40 of these well-known sayings and track them back to their original sources. You'll be surprised at what I found. Some are close to what was really said. Many were misattributed or twisted beyond their original meaning, and more than a few of these sayings were simply made up. I hope by setting the record straight, I can make you aware of the theological errors that can lead us away from the faith and offer you authentic quotes from Scripture, saints, and scholars that will draw you closer to our faith. Get your copy of What the Saints Never Said by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
It's the start of a new day for Morning Catholic Radio.
The nun is actually a religious woman who goes into the cloister and stays in the cloister. It's like a female version of a monk is what a nun is. And
that's a good explanation.
So the nuns of in Birmingham are praying for you, Brian. That's a powerhouse of prayer.
Totally blessed. I know some are praying
today.
For you, too.
That's right.
Morning Glory. Catholic from the start. Weekday mornings, 7 Eastern on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Stephanie Gray. She's the author of a book, Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth. And her website, loveunleasheslife.com, is where you can find out all about her. This pro-life open forum means anybody that's got a question about life issues can call. Whatever, quote-unquote, side you happen to be on, you are more than welcome. And the number, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We go now to Dana in Cypress, California. Dana, you are on with Stephanie Gray. Your question, please.
Yeah, I'll try and be concise here. But today is the 50th anniversary of the murder of Martin Luther King. And if you read his writings, he was very, very opposed to abortion in all its formats. But if you were to look at the voting record of African Americans here in the United States, you would never come to that conclusion because they vote so overwhelmingly pro-choice. And who you vote for in the United States is incredibly important on this particular issue. And my feeling is that the pro-life movement in America has been hijacked by what I call neoconservatives, who have become so conservative, and I want to be, you know, not exaggerating, but hateful towards anybody with black or brown skin or a foreign accent, that it's just become very, very difficult to vote for them anymore, even though they have a pro-life standpoint because of all the other stuff that they stand for. And I think that that's a real problem in the United States, that this movement here has no diversity into it. It's basically made up of white, very religious people who are interested in building walls all around the United States of America. And
you're referring to the pro-life movement. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you're when you say that, you're talking about the pro-life movement, or are you talking about a political party?
The pro-life movement itself. You know, if you go to the March for Life that's held all throughout this country, you really kind of see this very strong lack of diversity that exists, and it exists not because people are opposed to protecting unborn children. That's not what this is about. It's what they're opposed to all the other stuff that our pro-life politicians stand for, and they've become, in my opinion, a very ugly form of conservatism that, you know, it's become very difficult to support or vote for them, even though they might be, you know, have a pro-life legislative agenda.
Okay, Stephanie?
Yeah, I mean, certainly within any movement, you're going to have some people who represent it well and some people who represent it poorly. I would say in my experience in the pro-life movement, and not only my own country of Canada, but spending a lot of time in the movement in the United States, I do see a lot of diversity. There are African-Americans who are involved in the pro-life movement. There's a whole campaign, blackgenocide.org, that raises awareness about abortions being targeted towards the black community. There are a lot of Hispanics who are involved in the pro-life movement, who work in pregnancy care centers that are specifically trying to help Hispanic women who are faced with unplanned pregnancies. I certainly know in Canada, and I think you could say certainly in other parts of the United States, the Filipinos are very involved in the pro-life movement as well. So I would say there is diversity. Now, having said that, are there some people in the movement who want to protect preborn life but hold other views on other political issues that don't seem to be consistent? Yes, there are. And we're going to find that, just as you've pointed out, there will be some African Americans who will support a politician who is pro-abortion, but they maybe like that politician's policies on other matters. We see this all the time, where people are making choices by prioritizing one issue over another. And I would say that this is always the challenge whenever it comes to who to cast our vote for, is what issues are higher in the priority and what are lower. And I would say that when it comes to all of the rights, the most foundation of all rights, the foundational right, is the right to life. If I have no life, then what's the point of the right to freedom? Because I have no life with which to exercise my freedom. So I would say that I believe the right to life is primary, it's paramount. We need to prioritize that. But we need to be building into leaders so that they are people of virtue across the board, so that they represent the movement that's pro-life well, rather than turning people off by a lack of character.
Dana, I want to go back to you, but accepting Stephanie's answer, but also I want to ask you, is there any possibility that this may be kind of a stereotype of pro-lifers? Because you mentioned Dr. Martin Luther King, but the first woman doctor to graduate from Harvard Medical School was Mildred Fay Jefferson, and she was also the director of the National Right to Life Committee throughout the 1970s. And so and it may be that you'd say, well, she's not typical of the movement. I don't know, but I wonder if you have any concern that you might be stereotyping an entire movement.
I would be concerned about that. But clearly Martin Luther King was pro-life. And this woman that you mentioned, I've not heard of her, but a medical doctor would be somebody I would think would be highly likely to be pro-life because they understand the whole process of gestation better than your average citizen. I think that Stephanie's comments about a lot of African Americans, a lot of Filipino Americans, a lot of Hispanic Americans being involved in pro-life is absolutely true, but there's tens of millions of them that are voting for pro-choice candidates because they don't like to see walls built. They don't like, you know, police officers to shoot unarmed, law-abiding African Americans to death without any repercussions, and all these other things that pro-life political candidates seem to be strongly in favor of. And I hate to be cliche, but all you have to do is look at the conduct of our current president, who is the champion of pro-life in the United States. And all of these things about character are really pretty much destroyed at that point just because of their champion's conduct. I mean, right now, today, he is denying his sexual liaison with a pornographic movie star.
I'm not following the argument, though, Dana. It seems very impressionistic, this thinking. And I welcome you to your comments. But, let's be honest. Many politicians who are pro-life because they know that their constituents are pro-life. That's not, I mean, many politicians are pro-choice because they know their constituents are pro-choice. What makes the pro-life movement is millions and millions and millions of people who know what abortion is, who understand what abortion is, and vote accordingly. So, to me, that it's not an argument to say, well, the guy who claims the mantle of being the pro-life president is, you know, an unappealing figure. Therefore, the whole movement is besmirched. I'll go to you, Stephanie. Go ahead.
Well, and I think, again, there's problems when it comes to the vast majority of politicians. You know, I often ask people, who inspires you? And people will reference individuals like Martin Luther King Jr. They will talk about people that have lived virtuous, sacrificial lives, or they might pick politicians from the past, like William Wilberforce. But I don't hear people talk about politicians today in answering the question, who inspires them. You know, they don't say, oh, you know, this politician or that politician is really someone who inspires me. So we do have a serious problem in our culture today. It's a problem in not only politics, but a problem in entertainment, which is a rejection of virtue and an embracing of vice. So you're right to be concerned. But I would say this is a problem across the board. Whether you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, there are some good examples, but there's a whole lot of bad examples of people in positions of leadership who aren't living virtuous lives. So this is a problem. But because we can't completely ignore the foundational issues that need to be addressed, we're left with a messy situation where we have some people that aren't the best, most virtuous individuals. But when it comes to some issues that are paramount and primary, they might vote in the right way. And this is the dilemma that we're in.
Dana, thanks very, very much for the call. I do appreciate it. And I have to say, at a fundamental root level, I totally agree with Dana. I don't know if you do. I think that a more diverse pro-life movement is necessary. As a matter of fact, I think it should be so diverse that everybody is part of it, every single human being on Earth. That would be the appropriate diversity, I think.
Well, I agree. And that's why I really always frame the topic as this is a human rights issue. It's not a women's issue. It's not a black person issue. It's not a white person issue. It's a human rights issue. If we're a human, if we're humans, and if we believe in human rights, then all we need to do is say, if preborn children are human, then they have the same human rights as you or me. And what your skin color is, your age, your ethnicity, your sexual orientation, all of that is irrelevant. The question is, are you human?
We're going to take a quick break. Dana, thanks again for the call. More of your calls for Stephanie Gray during this pro-life open forum when we come back on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Bishop Robert Baer, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
God helps those who help themselves. Preach the gospel always. When necessary, use words. We all hear sayings like these, and we assume they come from the Bible, the saints, or famous Christian writers. Nobody can seem to place their origin, but by sheer repetition, they've acquired a halo of truth. In my new book, What the Saints Never Said, I look at over 40 of these well-known sayings and track them back to their original sources. You'll be surprised at what I found. Some are close to what was really said. Many were misattributed or twisted beyond their original meaning, and more than a few of these sayings were simply made up. I hope by setting the record straight, I can make you aware of the theological errors that can lead us away from the faith and offer you authentic quotes from Scripture, saints, and scholars that will draw you closer to our faith. Get your copy of What the Saints Never Said by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Would you like to become a Catholic Answers Live parish partner? We need you to help us spread the word at your local parish. We'll give you bumper stickers, window clings, flyers, everything you need to let your parish know about the best Catholic radio show on the air. We want you to partner with us. Email us at calpartners@catholic.com today and become a Catholic Answers parish partner.
Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite and inform your faith.
Every time we come here, it's just an incredible experience.
I love it. I'm so glad I came here.
And I'm having the time of my life.
Early bird pricing ends July 2nd. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
These guys are so amazing. I always get so much, learn so much. I've already signed up for next year.
Do you enjoy tedious lectures full of facts you'll never use? We didn't think so. That's why we're launching the Council of Trent, Trent Horn's engaging new podcast. Every week, you'll get lively lessons in Catholic teaching, as well as a new conversation roadmap that will help you share your Catholic faith with anyone, anytime, anywhere. Visit TrentHornPodcast.com now to find out how you can subscribe to this exciting new podcast.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Happy Easter. Easter week continues, and we are joined by Stephanie Gray, who at loveunleasheslife.com is her website. Love Unleashes Life is the name of one of her books, also A Physician's Guide to Discussing Abortion. And I've been talking too much, so we got to get to more calls, and I'm just got to find the call. Okay, Father Prem in Big Lake, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Is that correct, Father Prem?
Yes, Prem, Peorium.
Okay, Father, you are on with Stephanie. Your question.
That's wonderful. Well, I think the topic is very good, and you guys are really doing a good job, bringing out a lot of different points. My question to Stephanie is this. We have been doing a lot of work on the front of abortion and rallies and other things. But how much of your work, or even around the country, which I have not seen, have you at all considered trying to do some moral education, which is lacking actually in our society today, which is the root cause of abortion, because the family value system has collapsed. So there is a complete revival of culture has to happen. And so to that end, have you all ever considered doing anything apart from doing the work, for the stop of abortion?
Great question, Father. And I think a very important observation that the problem is bigger than abortion, for sure. Abortion is a very serious problem. It's very grave. It's the direct attack on innocent life. But there's this understanding that if we had solid families where, first of all, people weren't sexually promiscuous, but if they were, they had the support of their family and therefore would carry a pregnancy to term or choose adoption potentially within the family rather than abortion. If those things were set up, then abortion is less likely to happen. So I would say, yes, we need to do education in the area of sexuality, in the area of virtue in general, in building better families. You know, Catholic author Matthew Kelly has a book by that title, Building Better Families. There's a whole organization in Denver called Families of Character, which is all about restoring virtue and helping individual family members work as a team in growing in virtue. So there is a need to do this. I would say that one thing I have recognized over the years is that he who fights everywhere fights nowhere. And no one person can handle everything adequately. You know, that's why in the medical field, we have specialists. You know, the surgeon if you go to, you know, a heart surgeon and ask him about a pain on in your foot, he's going to say, whoa, find a specialist, you know, find a podiatrist, find somebody who works with feet. I couldn't tell you. So I would say for myself, I know what my specific calling is and my giftings and how I can best advance the cause of preborn children with that gifting, and that I will devote my energies there. But I recognize that I'm a link in a chain, a bond of connection between persons. I believe it was Cardinal Newman who said that in one of his prayers. And so I know that there are other people with other giftings and passions that need to focus on the area of building better families, and that that will work in a very complementary way to, for example, what I do. So the church is an example where the body of Christ takes on all these issues because they fall under the teachings of Christ. And so we have to fight abortion. We have to fight sexual promiscuity. We have to fight contraception. We have to build better families. We have to restore virtue in general. And so the church in its vastness can take on these issues with so many people and so many organizations that can become specialists in those areas.
Okay, Father.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, thank you so much. Again, you know, in our diocese, I don't really see much happening on that front. So hopefully in the coming months and years, we try to do something, because I never hear people trying to do anything in that line, because everything that happens is just with regard to abortion and or to the end to abortion. But this is one area I think I'm passionate about doing something. And like you said, you know, let all of us join together, even as simple links in the chain. Hopefully we could somehow better our country, better the world at large. And hopefully, again, a human person once again recognizes what right. dignity.
Amen.
Perhaps we ourselves have masked, you know, if not somebody else. We may have masked our own dignity, so we need to somehow dust off ourselves.
Well put. I know where you got that dust off metaphor, too, Father.
Yes,
thank you very much, Father,
Father,
for that call.
Well, and I want to emphasize again, Father, Families of Character, a program from Denver, and Building Better Families, a book by Matthew Kelly. I think both of those things will help you in your priestly ministry. And I think I can even mention it from my own archdiocese in Vancouver. You know, our archbishop has mandated that in all of our Catholic schools, the parents and students in fourth to seventh grade have to come to a program called Sexuality in Your Child, where there are a team of people who talk to the parents about how they can talk to their children about sexual morality, about puberty, about theology of the body, and about ethical use of social media. And so the idea is that parents are the primary educators of their children, but the archdiocese wants to do a better job of educating the parents so they can better educate their children. And I know in the United States, there's a wonderful bishop in Phoenix, Bishop Olmsted, and he has a very expansive program in which he really works to build up families and the message of the pro-life community at its broadest level through that diocese. And they might have some good ideas to help you in your area.
Thanks again, Father. Thank you very much for that call. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. We go now to Terry in Canton, Michigan, listening on Ave Maria Radio. Terry, your question for Stephanie Gray.
Actually, a statement, Si. Hi, Stephanie. Stephanie, I didn't know about you. If you knew about this event next week, so that would be Wednesday, April 11th in the United States, a national event. This is a peaceful pro-life walkout of classrooms by students taking their own initiative. Again, I want to stress peaceful. Now, my computer's running a virus check, so I can't give you a website, but it's the National Pro-Life Walkout Day on April 11th in the United States, and I want to stress that this is peaceful.
Well, thanks for mentioning that. I'm actually not aware of that program. And one thing that strikes me is, as it relates to what we talked about at the beginning of the program, the anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and how the civil rights movement believed in peacefully but boldly confronting the culture and engaging people with direct action, with marches, with sit-ins and protests. And so this sounds like it's along the same lines conceptually. And I would emphasize an important point for anyone who decides to participate in that is to remember those who walk out of the classrooms are not the victims. The civil rights activists were the victims. But when you walk out of the classroom on behalf of preborn children, you're not the victim, the baby is. So what's very important is that anyone who participates in that makes that victim known. Talk about who the baby is. Have an image of the preborn child. Have prenatal development facts ready and available about the baby's heart beating at 3 weeks and brainwaves detected at 6 weeks. Talk about the facts of what abortion does to that preborn child so that you represent the child in a way the child, because the child, rather, is incapable of representing herself.
Terry, thanks very much for informing us of that. Let's go to Leslie in Celeste, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Leslie, your question for Stephanie Gray.
Hello, and thank you. I just wanted to know, Stephanie, if you have been reading about, and if so, do you have any thought on this new frontier of creating embryos using the cells just from one human being, say the arm cells? I read all about this in the latest issue of Wired magazine, and they've done this with mice. And when I say they, I can't be very specific about what scientists. I do not believe it was in the United States. But it's definitely something being discussed, and certainly in small pockets, this research is going on, and I just wondered what your thoughts were about it.
Sure. Well, there certainly are a lot of things happening within the scientific community that are morally problematic. And if you look at something like cloning, let's contrast that with normal reproduction. The sperm and the egg only have half the genetic material needed to make a human, and if they're coming together, that forms the 46 chromosomes, typically unless there's a genetic anomaly. But in cloning, what happens is you can take a skin cell which already has 46 chromosomes in it. And what scientists are doing is they're taking an egg cell which has 23 chromosomes in it, and they're taking the nucleus out so there's no genetic material in the egg. And then they're putting the 46 chromosomes from the skin cell, for example, in that enucleated egg, and they're able to, with electricity and other things, they're able to replicate fertilization and make that cell then begin to divide, so that it would be a genetic clone of the individual that the cell originally came from with the DNA in it. And so I would say that is morally problematic because it's creating human life outside the context of sexual intimacy. And I think a phrase that can be helpful is to remember that human beings are supposed to be begotten, not made. We're supposed to be begotten, not made. We are supposed to be the fruit of a loving act between two people who are committed for life in the vocation of marriage. And that when you involve third parties, scientists in labs, taking parts of this human and that human, and putting them together, now we're turning the beginning of human life into a manufacturing process like building a car. But humans are not objects to be used and disposed of. We are subjects that are unrepeatable and irreplaceable that should be begotten out of an act of love. And so when you take the creation of human life outside of a union of love, then you start to treat humans like objects rather than subjects. So I would say that this would be problematic, as you've outlined.
Leslie?
Oh, awesome. I was smiling. I was looking for types of answers to this article, and that's awesome. Yes, thank you.
You might want to visit, I'll just throw this out there, loveunleasheslife.com is Stephanie's website, and so you might want to take a look there. Leslie, again, thanks for the call. The innovations seem to come. Oh, that reminds me of something Martin Luther King said, that we need to have a moral advancement that can keep up with our technological advancement. I think he said that several different times. But it's hard to do it. Moral advancement is just by its nature so much more plodding, slow to develop morally.
Well, right. And that's where, again, all of our actions we have to step back and say, not what can I do, but what ought I do? Not what is technically possible, but what is morally possible? What is the right thing to do? And so that's why, getting back to our previous conversation about, politicians and a general lack of virtue and the breakdown of the family, that if we want society to advance, if we want humans to flourish, then everything that we do has to be guided by a moral worldview that's based on a Judeo-Christian perspective that says humans have dignity, God exists, we're made in his image, and he knows better than we do as to how we ought to live. And so we seek out God's teachings to conform our lives to how our Creator lovingly made us to live.
Stephanie Gray, I see why you do what you do. Thank you so much for just a very enlightening hour. I really appreciate it. I'm glad we were able to, at least for a moment, remember Dr. Martin Luther King on this 50th anniversary of his murder, and associate that with the effort to make sure that life in all its stages is given the respect and dignity it deserves. Thanks so much, Stephanie. Let's do it again.
Sounds good.
I appreciate it. Tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum on Catholic Answers Live. Any question you've got about the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church is welcome. Easter week continues. Jesus Christ is the light of the nations. And we'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.